Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Can you hear that grinding sound? Yeah, it's the rumour mill, and it is going up a notch. I have to tell you, we're in the week now where it all starts to get really serious. We're seeing some signings confirmed in the Premier League. Big names moving. The likes of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, we've just been talking about on the Crystal Palace fan show. But there's serious business going on in the Football League as well. I'd like to start with a personal favourite, which is that QPR have quite literally swapped one Matt Smith for another. Matt Smith, the 30-year-old striker, has gone to Millwall, so they brought in another Matt Smith on loan from Man City. Perhaps there's some kind of superstition there, whereby if they don't have at least one in their squad, they'll definitely struggle. And I want to talk about Derby County as well, because it's the worst kept secret in football that Chelsea legend Frank Lampard, the club's all-time top scorer, is going to head back to Stamford Bridge as manager. Listen, Chelsea can posture and preen and keep this quiet all they like, and Derby can wind their own fans up by mismanaging the situation until the cows come home. We all know this deal is happening. Chelsea want it to happen. Lampard wants it to happen. Lampard's assistant, Jody Morris, wants it to happen. Derby are going to get 4 odd million quid in their pocket. They haven't got a choice, frankly. It's going to happen. The question now, well, there are two, frankly. One is, has Lampard conducted himself in the proper manner? It seems to me he has. We'll be asking, of course, Richard Cusack of Derby Live later in the show whether he agrees with that. But the bigger question is who Derby go for to replace Lampard. Now, they've got options. The traditional thing that Derby, or indeed any championship club battling at the top end, does in this situation is they recruit names we know very, very well. They play it safe. They go for the sort of lower echelon of no-nonsense English and British managers who are going to do a decent job. Derby have done it in the past with the likes of Steve McClaren. There are other names they could go for. Chris Hughton is actually a fantastic manager. I don't want to bandy him in with the last resorts. He's available. They could go for Sam Allardyce, talking of last resorts. Any man who can drink a pint of wine and, more importantly, decides to do that out of a pint glass should obviously be taken seriously as a football manager. Mark Hughes is another perennially linked name. And Tony Pulis, if he can get his baseball cap through the door at the County Ground, yeah, he's an option. But none of these guys are being linked. Now, Derby have, despite being from Derby, gone for the fashionable route recently. They went for the fashionable route in Frank Lampard. They sacrificed their status to an extent in that they became known as Frank Lampard's Derby for an entire year, which the last time I checked was not the name on the club's badge, but they went massively up in status as well. There was suddenly a huge magnifying glass over the club's activity, not just in England, but across the world as well. Having a big name like that involved gets everybody interested. And I think they've caught the bug. They've caught the fame bug, frankly. They've got used to being Frank Lampard's Derby, and they now want to be someone's Derby forever. Whether it's Johnny Burrow's Derby, whether it's Steven Gerrard's Derby, who was linked, they seem to be recognising that it can be really, really helpful to have a big name attached to your football club. Now, I'm not just talking commercially here, Frank Lampard's Derby, because Frank Lampard's Derby also did rather better on the pitch, because Frank Lampard, of Frank Lampard's Derby fame, being Frank Lampard, has some quite good connections. They absolutely milked that loan market for all it is worth. For Kayo Tomori and Mason Mount, Tomori shoring up the defence, Mason Mount scintillating going forward. Both came in loan from, oh, who? Chelsea. And where was that? Oh, yeah. No, top scorer. No link there, obviously. Then Harry Wilson comes in on loan from Liverpool. Is fantastic. Does he go to Derby County? I would suggest possibly not. Does he go to Frank Lampard's Derby? Yes, he does. And Derby now aren't messing around. They're being heavily linked with Dutch legend Philip Cocu as the replacement. Now, this is a funny one. frankly, because whilst I'm not advocating just going for Sam Allardyce, whenever you've got a vacancy, I'm not just talking for football managers. Need a new dinner lady? Sam Allardyce. Substitute maths teacher? Sam Allardyce. Need a lawyer? All right, probably don't go for Sam Allardyce, but you know, there are options there. They're going for a sort of cosmopolitan European star. And we can look at this in a couple of ways. We can do what I've done for the last 5 minutes. Keep saying Frank Lampard's Derby. Keep being, quite frankly, a rude old cynic going, you're doing this for the money. Or we can go, actually, you are doing this for the money. And it's very, very sensible. Because what Derby have done with Frank Lampard is they brought in a boss who did a very good job. They've shifted him after a year. And they've made a pretty penny. Now, obviously, they'd want to hold on to him for longer. But what if what they've realised here is that actually, names sell shirts. They sell clubs. And ultimately, they sell managers. If Derby have a not particularly fashionable but very effective English manager, up-and-coming English manager even, let's think of a sort of Michael Appleton-style figure. If they bring someone like him in, and he does a good job, gets them to sixth, loses in the Championship playoff final like Lampard did, Chelsea don't come calling. Barcelona don't come calling because Michael Appleton's Derby, with all due respect to Michael Appleton, who's a good coach, doesn't have the same ring to it as Frank Lampard's Derby, and it never will. I think a big reason why they're going for Cocu, beyond the fact that I'm sure they rate him as a coach, is because someone with his kind of CV, someone with that elite World Cup playing Barcelona representing prestige, if he does well, because he's going to be under that spotlight, they're going to be Philippe Cocu's Derby, well, Barcelona could come prowling, Manchester United could come prowling. This guy's got 101 caps for the Netherlands. I think Derby are being cynical here. They've got used to the fame, they've got used to the glamour, they've got used, frankly, to the, frankly, there we go, Frank Lampard's Derby, pun not intended, to the Hollywood lifestyle, and I think they think Cuckoo's going to keep it coming, and more power to them both. We'll be asking Richard Cusack later in the show of Derby County Live whether I am actually being a little bit harsh. But it's not just Frank Lampard's Derby that I want to talk about this evening. We, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, want to focus on the Lionesses, who are roaring back, still very much in this. England 1, USA 2, but the Lionesses breaking very sharply, very directly. There is something in this, but they just don't look quite clinical enough yet. I want to talk about the talent in the Football League, because it's the Football League special. Not just the Football League as well, but below. Because what we're seeing in this transfer window in particular is players coming through to top, top teams who've come out of non-league. And there are classic examples of this, but there are new names flying around the whole time. We've got the news breaking today that Brentford have signed Barnsley defender Ethan Pinnock for an undisclosed fee, thought to be around the £3 million mark. Now, Pinnock joined the club from Barnsley. He played a big role in getting them promoted, but he's 26 and he's actually not been playing professional football for that long. He came through at Dulwich Hamlet in 2010. He was there for 6 years. This is a guy who's got his footballing education in non-league and he's now going to be playing top-end Championship football. The list doesn't stop there. Where did we begin the show? With the fantastic, hilarious news that QPR have swapped one Matt Smith for another. Well, that Matt Smith, the striker, has gone to Millwall. Well, what's his footballing background? Let's have a look, shall we? He was playing for New Mills while attending the University of Manchester, then Redditch, then his former clubs, reads like a who's who of non-league, Solihull everywhere. Towards the end of his 20s, he's ended up as a competent Championship footballer. And there are big names on big, big money who are getting these moves. Che Adams, who's just gone to Southampton for 15 million quid from Sheffield, from Birmingham City, I should say, previously of Sheffield United. He got to Sheffield via which illustrious footballing names? No, not Frank Lampard's Derby, not Philippe Cocu's Derby. Oadby Town and Ilkeston. And if you'd heard of either of those two clubs before I just said them live on Love Sport Radio, I owe you a fiver, frankly. Jared Bowen, who is today being linked with a £12 million move to Arsenal in the Sun. Where did he get his footballing education? Hereford, back in 2014. They promptly went bust. They now exist again. But this is a guy who is being compared to Iron Robin for his goal-scoring exploits in the Championship, his ability to cut in from the right wing onto a lethal left foot. Where did he get his football education? Non-league. The list goes on. Jamal Lowe, Millwall's main transfer target in this transfer window for £2.5 million. Yeah, he plays for Portsmouth now. Where was his education? Barnet, Boreham Wood, various smaller clubs on loan. Joe Aribo, who, talking of Frank Lampard's Derby, has just signed for Steven Gerrard's Rangers, largely because of the appeal of the star name. Yeah, he came from Charlton on a free, but where was his big education? Where did Charlton find him? Staines Town. Now we get into the biggest names of all when it comes to non-league. Charlie Austin, also of Southampton. Well, who are his former clubs? Kintbury Rangers. Where is Kintbury? Has anyone ever been there? Does it exist? Find it on a map. Go on. Hungerford Town. Okay, I know where Hungerford is. And the big one, who is the biggest of all? Who loves a party? Who's played for England at World Cup finals, having only really turned up at the age of 25? Jamie Vardy, who, of course, inside 10 years ago, was playing, leading the line, no less, for Stocksbridge Park Steels. This is not a coincidence. And yeah, most of these guys, there are other points along the way, right? You're not going straight from Stocksbridge Park Steels to scoring in 14 consecutive Premier League games. You're going to, you know, a Leicester before you immediately start banging goals in for Leicester. And we forget that that's where they've come from. But what we're seeing and what clubs like Brentford, like QPR, like Millwall are so good at unearthing are these gems. We were talking on the Crystal Palace fan show. We got a feature called Legend of the Week. We were talking about Ian Wright, who's the ultimate example of a guy who only broke into the professional game in his early 20s because he was spotted doing what? No, not in Tesco's, playing non-league football. There are brilliant people playing non-professional football in this country. Some of them aren't going to be very good. We all know that the average Sunday league player loves a kebab, loves a pint, turns up hungover. Some of them only turn up looking for a fight, frankly, as far as I can tell. Most of them don't, it should be noted. I'm not saying that everyone who kicks a football in this country is some kind of athletic diamond in the rough. Most of them clearly are going to be pants, but there are bargains there. And particularly for smaller clubs in the Football League looking to pick up gems and, by the way, looking to make a profit, just have a look. Because Che Adams, £15 million to Southampton. Well, young, English, quick, scores goals, bargain. If you'd got him straight from Ilkeston, it might have been a little bit cheaper. So let's just think about that. When we see all of these rumours, when we see Harry Maguire to Manchester United for £80 million, buy them when they're younger. Buy them when they're playing for Barnet. Take some risk. Let's stop this needless inflation of the transfer market. Have a look at Hayes and Yedding. Have a look at Ilkeston. Have a look at Stocksbridge Park Steelers, if you can find it on a map. There is talent out there, and we need to go and look. And we can do it with or without superstar managers, but we will turn our attentions to one of those former non-league stars now, Che Adams. Have Southampton bought themselves a diamond in the rough? In just a moment, we'll be asking Nick Mashiter, football correspondent for the Press Association. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio. And if you're just joining us, a quick update for you from the Women's World Cup. The Lionesses still struggling against the Americans. 62 minutes played. It's England 1, the USA 2. There is still time, but they need to get on with it. And talking of time, you can start your career in non-league and still have plenty of it to find your way up to the Premier League. It's time to talk about Che Adams, who is Southampton's new £15 million forward arriving from Birmingham City. Delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Nick Mashiter, football correspondent for the Press Association. Nick, good evening. Thank you for joining me. Have Southampton bought a dud?
No, not at all. I think you look at the fees banded about now, especially for young sort of British talent, and he could be, Che Adams could be one of the bargains of the summer. He's progressed very well at Birmingham. You know, it's taken time to get into the sort of the goal scoring groove. Even last season, he did at a sort of slow start last season. great mid-season form, and then tailed off a little bit at the end. But he's got power, he's got pace, he's kind of all action, he's all energy. I think in a couple of years' time, they could be looking back and thinking it was 15 million quid well spent.
22 goals in 46 championship appearances is quite some return. And the first word that always comes up when you ask someone about Che Adams is pace. Is he quite nippy?
Yeah. It'll be very difficult to handle for some players in the Premier League. But he's also strong. You know, he's just not a lightweight, pace man. He can hold the ball up. He can link it. He can bring others into play. So he is sort of got all the attributes to be the whole package. Obviously, 22. He's still quite young. He's not playing the Premier League. So there will still be more developing to do, and it is, of course, a step up for him. As I said, I think he's got all the attributes to succeed.
Do you think his career has benefited from playing in non-league?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, some players need to do that. Others can go through the academy system and flourish, you know. All you've got to do is look at Jamie Vardy, isn't it? You know, look at how he's come on, what he's done in sort of the later years of his career, because he didn't come into professional football until kind of sort of, you know, mid-20s, virtually.
With these guys, though, like Vardy, do you think Vardy made it because he'd been in non-league or despite of it? What I mean is, if he'd gone into the Chelsea Academy as a 16-year-old, would he have been just as good, but earlier?
Maybe not. I mean, Jamie said in the past that when he left Fleetwood for Leicester, it was a big step up. He didn't feel he fitted in. He didn't feel like he was ready. He wanted to go back to Fleetwood. It was maybe too much of a step up for him. He's proved, obviously, that wasn't the case. And, you know, he's obviously, you know, confounded expectations possibly when he signed in 2012 or so, wasn't it, I think. A lot of it will be down to mentality. There'll be some exceptional kids in non-league, and there'll be some exceptional kids in the academy system, but they might go different ways depending on the mentality and how much they want it. I guess you can have all the talent in the world, if you're not focused and have that right mentality, then you may well not make it.
Do you think Che Adams' head is in the right place to become a really top player?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's had a few difficult times at Blues, and, you know, obviously most of them have. It's not been the most settled club over the last few years, of course. But I think now he's got that move to the Premier League. You look at how Southampton have nurtured not only the ones that they've brought in through their system in the past, like Oxlade-Chamberlain and Theo Walcott, but also sort of the younger guys that they brought in, like Nathan Redmond, who was a hair's breadth from returning to the England squad for the Nations League.
Is he another former Birmingham man, Redmond?
He is indeed. Yeah. They got him from Norwich 3 years ago now, I think.
Right, so there's another link between the two clubs there. Obviously, Adams with a great goal return in the Championship this season, 22 in 46. But there are some strikers, and Dwight Gayle springs to mind, who bang in goals on a consistent basis in the Championship and simply don't seem able to do it at the higher level. Do you worry about that for Adams? Ellen White, you absolute beauty. I do apologise, Nick, but that is a fantastic goal. I don't know if you're watching this, and I normally try not to get quite that excited, but she found herself clear. She was played in one-on-one beyond that American defensive line. She slots home into the bottom left-hand corner, and the Lionesses are level. And almost as importantly, Alex Morgan has been overtaken, I should say, by Ellen White. Morgan got her sixth of the tournament, and celebrate if you rule this out with VAR. If you rule this out with VAR, she looks ever so slightly offside. Nick, I'm so sorry, but if I see this box being drawn by the referee, I'm going to have a breakdown live on the radio. Oh, we saw. Have you been watching the Lionesses, Nick?
Yeah, I've not managed to catch it this evening, but I did watch. The quarterfinal.
Tell you what, once I've finished stealing your evening away from you, you need to get this last 20 minutes on. Alex Morgan scored her sixth of the top. Do not VAR. Oh, they are VAR checking it. Nick, they're going to rule it out. Can you hold my hand? This is completely unreasonable. Alex Morgan, for context, got her sixth of the tournament with a goal against England. She did this annoying little drinking a cup of tea celebration, which I'm fundamentally not having. That, of course, drew her level with Ellen White. Ellen White just got her seventh. No goal. She didn't. Nick, it's been ruled out.
Yes.
It's heartbreak, ecstasy to heartbreak for me. We're going to have to move on quickly or I'm going to start crying. As an update for everyone listening, it's England 1, the USA 2 still. VAR, I'm normally such an advocate, until it rules out goals scored by my team. Nick, we were talking about Che Adams' ability to make the step up to the Premier League before I started squeaking. Do you think he can do it?
Yeah, look, you just look at his career progression over time, going from non-league, doing well at Sheffield United, progressing slowly at Birmingham, you know, having obviously the best season to date, certainly in terms of goals last season, certainly profession at least anyway. He's had that base, he's had that level, he can now make that step up, and it's not like he's signed for 50 million. Look, 50 million is still an awful lot of money in general terms in the Premier League. As we said, it might well turn into be a bit of a bargain. But he's going there. There's probably not an awful lot of pressure on him. So he can develop there. It's the right step. He's not going to a Liverpool where everybody will expect him to bang in 30 goals. If he just sort of continues to that slow, steady progress. He's only young. Southampton, as you said, they look after their players and their young talent. There's no reason why he can't be a success there.
How many Premier League goals are you expecting from him, Nick?
I think if he can get anywhere around the double figures, 7 to 10. In a debut Premier League season, then absolutely, I think that will have to go down as a successful season. But you've got to see how Ralf Hasenhüttl has and other teams develop as well. You know, he hasn't had this would be his first pre-season with them. So I'm sure we'll see a slightly different Southampton as we did last season. Although obviously he was in charge for the majority of the second half of the season. So. A lot of it will depend on obviously how they set up and how they develop under the manager. But I think if he can touch double figures, then it will certainly be a successful one for them.
Nick, wonderful stuff. Thank you ever so much for your time, and thank you for seeing me through the trauma of having a VAR goal disallowed for the Lionesses as well. Nick Mashita, their football correspondent for the Press Association. And we're moving on. We talked at the beginning of this show about the extreme levels of quality that are existing, not just in the Football League, but in non-league as well. And we're looking now at another example of a player who could be making the step up to the Premier League. Jarrod Bowen, who of course got his breakthrough at non-league Hereford back in 2014 when they were in dire financial straits, now of Hull City, doing great things and being linked with a £12 million move to Arsenal in The Sun today. I'm delighted to say, joined on the line by Alfie Potts-Harmer of HITC7's YouTube channel and of course an expert Hull City fan. Good evening, Alfie. Thanks for joining me. First of all, is £12 million enough?
No, but we have rather on a habit of undervaluing players. You look at Harry Maguire, who's rejected a £70 million bid today. We don't go for 17. Andy Robertson was £8 million up front, 12 with add-ons. Don't know what it'd be worth now. So, yeah, just another day in the life of the Alam ownership. So, yeah.
Alfie, I can hear the pain in your voice. Talk me through what kind of player Bowen is, because some people like to compare him to Iron Robin.
Well, he does like to... He uses a left footer, he plays on the right flank, and he does like to cut inside and sort of pick out that left side of the goal. He's not lightning quick like Robin is or was, I should say. But he's a goal scoring wide player. I mean, 22 goals last season is pretty phenomenal from a wide area for a player of his age, and in a team that wasn't exactly for the first half of the season we were down in the bottom, and then we had a bit of a renaissance, so we're hardly blowing teams away.
Goal-scoring form, as you say, but the Premier League is a step up. The top end of the Premier League is another step up from that. Is he good enough for Arsenal?
It's almost impossible to say, really, until someone's doing it. Like you say, unlike Maguire and Robertson, he's got a handful of games in the Premier League when we were virtually already relegated. But one thing I'll say for him, he's got a fantastic attitude, which you can't say for every young player. He's never once, tried to push a move through or anything like that. He seems quite a grounded lad, not flashy or anything like that, which always bodes well.
How likely, Alfie, do you think this move is to happen?
I'm not totally confident. I think he'll certainly leave this summer. We've got a new manager, Grant McCann, who seems to think everyone's going to stay. You can see that he hasn't been around long. But I'm not sure if it'll be Arsenal, because the cynic in me says it could just be a sort of nudge in the direction of Crystal Palace and Wilfred Zaha to say that, they've got other options rather than interest.
But yeah, instead of buying your international footballer for 80 million, we're going to go to Hull for 12. Ooh.
Yeah. Well, it just sort of saying, we've got...
Yeah.
We're not... That's a
really good point, actually, and I hadn't considered that at all. So you're suggesting that Arsenal could basically just be posturing and playing wind-up?
Well, we've seen it before. It's possible. I think he had the chance to join Cardiff last January and turned it down because he said he felt a bit, he wasn't quite sure because he was after the whole Salah.
Yeah, a difficult time to enter that football club.
Yeah, he said he didn't feel quite right. So he'll have options, but I don't know. The club have come out and said that there hasn't been a £12 million bid. If there is
right.
any interest there, it's not been tabled. Or anything.
Well, Alfie, you've enlightened us. Perhaps Arsenal aren't actually interested. They're playing the wind-up. That's what we like here on the Rumour Mill, cutting through the noise of that gossip. Alfie, thank you so much for your time. Lovely to chat to you as ever. Alfie Potts-Harmer there of HITC7's YouTube channel and an expert, and it sounds long-suffering, Hull City fan as well. Coming up, we're turning our attentions to Aston Villa, and they've been in the Premier League for, less than 5 minutes, frankly, and already United are trying to sign their best players. Will you leave them alone?
This is Love Sport.
Right, I like nothing more than listener interaction, all right? But sometimes you lot are cheeky. I was talking about players who've come through non-league at the beginning of the show. We talked about Charlie Austin, whose prestigious former employers include the likes of Kintbury Rangers and Hungerford Town. And I said, if anyone can find me Kintbury on the map, I will be very impressed. I'll give them a fiver. Well, Martin, listening in Southwark, I should say, has tweeted into the show with just a screenshot of Google Maps and Kintbury, which has educated me. It's somewhere between Inkpen and Elcott. Thank you for the education. That imaginary £5 is yours. Now, having been well and truly mugged off, we move on to all things Aston Villa. By the way, looking that the Lionesses are being mugged off as well. Not only have we had a goal disallowed for offside, Ellen White has just been hauled down when she looked sure to turn in from a Nikita Paris cross. Well, now, here's my question for you, right? Why are we not applying VAR on everything? because this referee has got no problem applying it when Ellen White scores a goal, but when she gets fouled in the box, slightly less interested. I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. But to Aston Villa and to calming me down, I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Dan Bardell, presenter of the Villa View podcast. Good evening, Dan. Thanks for joining me. Before we talk rumours, and we're here to do that, I want to get your take on someone who's already joined the club. Wesley Moraes, over 20 million quid, Brazilian striker, joins from the Belgian league. Are you pleased with him?
I'm not going to come on here and pretend I've seen loads of him or know a lot about him. Because
no, fair enough.
All I can say is that the last striker that we pulled from the Belgian league all those years ago was Christian Benteke, and he was relatively unknown, and he turned out very, very well for us. He gave us three seasons of scoring around 20 goals. So if the new boy would be anything like that, I'll be very, very happy.
Yeah, not a bad piece of business was that. And you, of course, turned a healthy profit when you sold him to Liverpool as well. But it's not just signings that you're being linked with, because it is going to be a busy summer at Villa Park. You're being linked with sales as well. The Sun this week are saying that Manchester United are in for John McGinn. Do you believe this one?
I'd love to know what the person that wrote that has been taking, because there's just so much wrong with that story. I mean, from what I hear, I think there's a couple of players in contract negotiations with the club at the moment, and I think McGinn's one of them. He'll be sure to get a new contract.
Dan, I want to come on to the details of this in just a moment. It's fascinating stuff, but we've got high drama in the Lionesses game. I criticised the referee, which I shouldn't do. She was clearly listening, because there is now a VAR review on that possible penalty for a foul on Ellen White. If you ask me, there's contact on the back of her leg before she makes contact with the ball. By the letter of the law, it looks like a penalty. You just wonder as well whether this referee might feel a bit of pressure, because having ruled out an England goal, rightly, it has to be said, using VAR, is she going to give a penalty? Just give it. You know you want to give it. It'll be good for the game. 9 minutes to play. Dan, can you see this? Do you reckon it's a pen?
I turned it off, to be honest, when I came on, because I didn't want to be distracted.
Oh, no, you're a model professional. I apologise for putting you on the spot. Tell you what, one of the major complaints about VAR, and it's a valid one, is that they take forever. We get it live, what the ref is seeing on the screen. She's seen it 30 times, at least. I think she's speeding it up, which I can't believe that makes it easier. We're watching it in kind of 1.5 times speed now, which, not good television, frankly. There's contact. Give a penalty. Please. Dan, I'm so sorry. The drama is too much for me. You're lucky. Well, what's she doing? Okay, she stopped watching the penalty and she's walking back to the centre circle. She's pointed to the spot and she's given England a penalty. Producer Josh is dancing in the control room. Dan, we're going to come on to John McGinn in just a moment. Can we let Ellen White take this, by the way? Because Nikita Parrish, she's a fantastic player. She's missed her last two. If Ellen White scores it, she goes ahead of Alex Morgan in the race for the Golden Boot. And no English man or woman should be interested in Alex Morgan winning the Golden Boot after that goal celebration. The American keeper looking very, very nervous in that net. Who's stepping up to take it? It doesn't look like Ellen White to me. It doesn't look like Nikita Paris. Oh, God, the rules. The referee now telling the goalkeeper she's got to be 8 feet behind the line if she's allowed to save the penalty. Absolute nonsense. Now, who's going to take this for England? She's stepping up.
Horton, I think.
It is Horton. It's the captain, the big defender, taking responsibility. She's experienced. She's played at World Cups before. She's played at Olympics. She's played for Man City. She's played for Arsenal. This would be the biggest goal of her career so far. And she's missed the penalty, Dan. She's missed the penalty. It was a terrible penalty. We need to move on very, very quickly. Talk me out of my malaise. John McGinn, you were saying nonsense, this deal. Why?
Yeah. I mean, I love John McGinn. He was fantastic for us last season. But he's unproven in the Premier League. He'll do very well for us this season. I'm really, really sure of that. But there's absolutely no chance that Man United are looking at him after one season with Villa in the Championship. There's no chance they're going to splurge 50 million.
Well, yeah, because 50 million is the figure, and he's a good player, but 50?
Yeah. No, I mean, to be honest, I think whatever, if let's say they did come in for him, which I don't think they will, I do think it's nonsense, but Villa wouldn't accept any offers for him because we don't need to sell him. We need to build the side. He's very, very happy.
And you don't think his head could be? You don't think his head could be turned, Dan?
No chance. I don't think he's that type of guy. To be honest, I think he's very settled with Villa. I think he's very grateful for Villa for giving him a chance last season in the English League, and I believe he's just looking forward to the new season in the Premier League with Villa. I'm almost certain he'll get a new contract.
Interesting for him as well. A fantastic opportunity with what is looking to be a very exciting team ahead of next season. And one more man who could be part of that is Adam Webster of Bristol City, the big centre-half, who is in today's Daily Star being linked with a move to Villa to the tune of £25 million English pounds. Dan, does that sound a bit steep to you?
I've got to be honest, some of the prices that are being quoted for Villa pulling players from the Championship, I mean, we've got the same kind of thing with Phillips at Leeds. I'm aware that the money's changed. In the 3 years we've been away from the Premier League, the money has changed dramatically. I mean, it looks like Man U have made a £70 million offer for Harry Maguire today, and that's been rejected. So I accept that the money's crazy. The £25 million for someone that's never played in the top flight, that's too much.
Yeah,
I think we'll probably pay it if we want him, because a lot of our players were on loan last season, especially in the defensive area. So we're pretty light at centre back at the moment. We've only got James Chester, and we've managed to bring Courtney Hawes in on a permanent deal, who was with us in the second half of last season. But we're pretty light at centre back. He looks a good player from what I've seen of him. He's very comfortable on the ball, a bit like Twanzabian Mings for us last season. So it's the kind of signing I'd like to see us make. But I'm just astonished by the prices that are being linked.
Yeah, I mean, in a world where Harry Maguire is £80 million, I've got to be £5 million, I reckon, Dan. I've never seen you play. You're probably £10 million, because I can't imagine you're any worse than I am. You mentioned Twanzabe and Mings there. They were, of course, on loan from United and Bournemouth, respectively. Oh, it's a red card. It's a red card for it. Dan, it's all going wrong. It's all going wrong. I'm trying to sound cheery. It's Millie Bright. She's been dismissed for two bookings, and it has to be said that the second yellow wasn't just a yellow, it was a yellow and a half. You could give a red for that one. She goes in with one of her boots studs up. She catches the American player. It's looking like curtains for the Lionesses. As a final question, because now I need even more distraction, is there any chance of Twanzabe, any chance of Mings back on loan or on a permanent this season?
I think it's dragging on longer than it should be, but I do think Mings will be back. It's a no-brainer for the club, and it's a no-brainer for the player. And to be honest, I don't think he's got any future with Bournemouth. So I'm not sure what the hold-up is there at the moment. I've heard various rumours that I won't go into, but there is a hold-up there. But I do think it will happen because it is a no-brainer.
Are these rumours salacious, Dan? I'm not going to make you tell me, but is there funny business going on?
No, nothing like that. I mean, again, I think the fee might be a bit of an issue with clubs moving goalposts, but that seems to be the norm nowadays. I think there's some personal stuff as well, but I don't really want to go into it. But
fair enough.
Twanzabe, I'd love to have him back because I really believe that whatever happens this season, he'll play for England. I think he's a class act, and I think I look at some of the centre backs that are at Man United and have recently signed new contracts, and I think Twanzabe is better than them. He's better than Smalling. And he's better than Phil Jones, so I think Man U would be crazy.
Is he better than Harry Maguire?
No, I don't think he's better than Harry Maguire, but I think potentially he could be. Obviously, I saw a lot of him last season. He's going to be a very, very good player, Twanzabe. He's very athletic, very, very quick, really good on the ball. He's composed. He knows what he's doing. To be fair, he's played for Man U in the Premier League, so if you play for Man U in the Premier League, in general, you must have something about you. So if it was to happen, I think it would be a last-minute one, because I think that would mean that Man U have got Harry Maguire and they have maybe brought another centre-back in alongside him, because they'll want Twanzabe to play football. I think he'd be interested in coming back to Villa on loan for another season, but I think permanent, absolutely no chance, because as I say, he'll be an England player at some point.
Dan, it's a wonderful tip and wonderful to speak to you as well. Thank you for your time. Dan Bardell, presenter of The Villa View. As we see Alex Morgan, the star American striker, just throw herself to the ground. She was being fouled by Nikita Paris. He was grappling away. But it's just a dive. It is a dive. And Alex Morgan, if England go out here, as it's looking that they will, her one real rival for the Golden Boot, Ellen White, will be out. Now, Morgan has played fewer minutes. She'll have another game. She'll be the favourite for the Golden Boot. Fair enough. She's a brilliant striker. She's one of the biggest names in the women's game. She scored a great goal this evening, but a goal celebration annoyed me, and now she's diving. Let's have it up a level, please, Alex. I'm not impressed by any of this, but I have to say, I am impressed by Frank Lampard's derby. But coming up, will they be Frank Lampard's derby for that much longer? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
I'm so sorry. I'm so excited because 7 minutes of stoppage time. I was going to say, there's life in this. There's no life in me. 7 minutes of stoppage time for the Lionesses, two of which have been played. They are still in it. But one man who might not still be at his football club for much longer is Frank Lampard of Frank Lampard's Derby fame. Delighted to say I'm joined on the line by a real expert in this area, Richard Cusack of Derby County Live. Richard, is Lampard a done deal?
Hi, Johnny. Yeah, thanks for having me back on. Yeah, I think so, pretty much. He is heading off, probably announced tomorrow, I think. It looks a done deal now. I think the formalities in terms of compensation just had to be ironed out, and obviously Lampard had to make sure that Jody Morris, Chris Jones were heading with him as well, first team coach and assistant manager. So Lampard looks, it's nailed on now, I think.
And what's the perception of Lampard from a Derby point of view? Obviously people can't begrudge him a move to the club he loves, but do people feel that he's conducted himself properly?
I think what might have rankled a little bit with some Derby fans is the fact that obviously this was being talked about shortly after the playoff final, which was May 27. You know, it's July the 3rd tomorrow, isn't it? It's been a long time. Two or three weeks ago, we were talking about it possibly being a done deal, and certain media outlets were saying it would be 48 hours about 10 days ago. But the thing is, they take time, these deals. It's not Football Manager, is it? You know, it's not the PlayStation.
Oh, if only.
Press a button and it... well, yeah, quite. It makes our lives an awful lot easier. You can't just press a button and it's done on these things. Stuff takes time. You know, formalities, paperwork, lawyers have to look at it. So, but I think, obviously, Derby fans have perhaps... you know, it would have been better, maybe. I mean, Derby's players were back for pre-season training yesterday. You'd like to have your manager in by then, but Derby have certainly wasted no time at all in getting their affairs sorted, because Philip Cocu is the man in the fray now, and it looks like he's going to get the job.
What do you make of Cocu as a potential appointment?
It's an interesting one, because obviously he's just come off of, I think it was a 16-game spell in Fenerbahce in Turkey. He started there, didn't quite work out for him, but if you look at his track record before that, at PSV, he spent five very productive years there. Obviously, people have their reservations about the Eredivisie. It's only a two or maybe a three-team league, if you're being generous, with the Ajax and Feyenoord as well. But I think what stood out there is developed players like Memphis Depay. I think was one of the sort of like the standout names there. That he took through the youth system, and then obviously he got his big move to Manchester United. Derby fans, I think it's a name it's a departure from the managerial merry-go-round, to use a cliche, isn't it? You see the same names come out on the betting slips and stuff, and this is another left field appointment like Lampard was, which I think excites fans, a bit of the unknown. And
well,
listen, anybody who knows their continental football knows that Philip Cocu is a big name for his time at Barcelona and PSV.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on, but with that, it's not just a left field appointment, is it? It's a famous appointment. And am I being cynical to suggest that Derby are perhaps getting a little bit invested, not that they shouldn't, but a little bit preoccupied by famous, well-known managers?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Lampard wasn't a famous, well-known, he was a famous name, and look how that's worked out. Derby would be quite within their rights to say, well, we went for something different last time, we're going for something different again today. What I think is, you know, if you look at the people, there was Danny Cowley from Lincoln. He was sort of touted as a potential.
That would be an interesting one.
It would have been an interesting one. But I think if you ask any Derby fan or any football fan if they prefer Danny, you know, a manager who, with all due respect to Danny Cowley, he's not managed in the Championship, whereas Philip Cocu, obviously, he will have his contacts in the game. that's going to be big for Derby. They need a manager who's able to call upon some of the most famous youth ranks in football, like Lampard did with Chelsea.
So are we going to see him going to Barcelona? Are we going to see the brightest products of La Masia swapping sunny Barcelona for the mountains of Derbyshire?
Yeah, well, listen, it'd be well within your rights to look, any potential player, look at what happened with Fikayo Tomori, Mason Mount, and Harry Wilson last year, and
yes,
they couldn't play for us.
They weren't moving from Catalonia, were they? I mean, I'm a big fan of a walking holiday, Richard, but Spain to the Peak District, really?
Well, I mean, listen, working under a manager like Cocu, whose track record, like I've said, for developing young players, I think Mel Morris is keen to utilise the academy as well. I think that's something that that's been sold to Cocu. He'll have the ability to call upon the academy players. Look at the likes of Jaden Bogle, his emergence last year. Lampard did a great job with him. What other prospects are in the academy? That's not just for loan players, that's also going to be key. And I think that's also something that Cocu will be keen to get stuck into.
Obviously,
at Derby when he arrives.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. And obviously, Cocu was a fantastic player. What kind of style can we expect from him as a manager?
Well, it's interesting because obviously Mel Morris, the owner and executive chairman, did come out on a national radio station last week and say that he wanted Derby to carry on the style of play that had brought them such, I think you can call it, success under Lampard, even though they lost in the playoff final. You could certainly say it was a successful season. I think the style of play under previous incumbent Gary Rowett left a lot to be desired. It was functional, but it was attritional, and it didn't get many bums on seats, whereas the style of play last season went a long way to re-energising the fan base. Some excellent football was played at times. I think we'll be able to see a similar tactical setup, a 4-3-3 with attacking fullbacks and wingers coming in off the wide areas, and the striker who will be looking to leave the line, whether it's Jack Marriott or Martin Waghorn. I don't think we'll see too much of a departure from the same tactics that were sort of used last season. So I think hopefully that will be a bit more of a smoother transition in that sense when Cocu eventually arrives, as we're expecting him to.
Richard, wonderful stuff. Really, really enlightening as ever. Thank you for talking to me. Richard Cusack there of Derby County Live, giving his take on impending Derby boss Philip Cocu. And I've got some gutting news as well, frankly, from the Women's World Cup, because the Lionesses are out. Ellen White's one goal wasn't enough. They go out 1-2 against the USA's women. Ellen White, of course, had a very, very fractionally offside second ruled out. Steph Houghton then missed from 12 yards after a penalty was awarded for a foul on White. Listen, I would love to sit here and have a pop at America. And yes, Alex Morgan annoyed me. Her tea drinking celebration is nonsense. Her diving at the end was nonsense. But her goal was fantastic. The Americans are a fantastic footballing team. Tobin Heath, Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan. These are some of the iconic names of not just women's football this year, not just the last decade, but women's football of all time. And actually, the phrase "it's coming home" is one that we use jokingly. Right, I use it to wind my producer up when I sing it to him in breaks. And we got in trouble for it last summer in the Men's World Cup because people were saying, oh, the English are so arrogant. It's coming home. How can you mean it's coming home? Firstly, how is England its home? And secondly, why are you so confident it's going to win? Listen, shut up. It's coming home does not mean for a second England are going to win the World Cup. Whether we're talking about the men, whether we're talking about the Lionesses, when we say, when we sing, when we chant, it's coming home, what we're saying is not that England are going to win the World Cup. What we're saying is that we support this football team. We've been inspired as a nation, as a frankly unified nation for the first time in about 30 years. We are behind one cause who we have faith in. And yeah, the Lionesses have gone out. They're not in a World Cup final. They're not going to win the thing. I'm disappointed. But the other side of the coin is that that couldn't happen less, because that is the first time in the history of football in this country, bearing in mind the FA banned women's football for many years, this is the first time the phrase "it's coming home" has ever been applied to women's football when we've meant it. And we've meant it with good reason, because Nikita Paris, Steph Houghton, Ellen White, bronze. These players are fantastic. They've inspired a nation, and regardless of the absence of a World Cup win, what this run has done for women's football in the world and women's football in England cannot be understated. So yeah, frankly, we've lost, but go on the Lionesses, it's coming home.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. Sport.